Brought to you by Face to Face Games.
The first rule of Fight Club is...
Comedy showcase, which was mercifully short. Then we had Korean barbecue dinner reservations with a bunch of other friends, so I got home at about midnight. And thank whatever god you want, we got a free hour of sleep.
Dude, that was the biggest surprise. I didn't even remember that it was a thing, so I was like, holy shit, score.
Most of our shit's automated. Even our the alarm clock next to our bed changes automatically. So it's You don't even really know.
Yeah, I was like, wow, man, it's really early. Why do I want to wake up? I'm like, all right, whatever. Fuck it. And then I'm like, oh, shit. We got an extra hour. So I'm like, dope. There's one clock in my house in my bathroom that I just never change. So I'm like, oh, great, it tells the correct time now. So every 6 months, it tells the correct time. So... we've all adapted to using it. We're like, that's not the right time. So it'll be funny because now we'll be like, holy shit, we're an hour late. It'll be awesome. Okay. Oh, man. So what else have you been up to, man?
Besides, I feel like just bowling. Working. I mean...
Well, work is steady. That's dope.
Yeah, I can't complain about that. I mean, this board game tournament thing I went to last week was fucking ridiculous, which was... We'll get to that eventually. Did you watch any of the PT coverage?
I did. I was watching, I watched a little bit on Friday and then I was watching a little bit now, but, oh, by the way, welcome in, a Hype Club episode every once in a while, a random. I'm a dude that is irrelevant in society, and I've got another guy who is pretty much so forgotten that he's not even controversial or infamous anymore. So I find find that pretty sweet.
Like that's where we're at. Life has passed us by, and that's fine. I feel like one more thing I saw coming a long time ago, and I was like, you know, whatever, we'll ride this wave.
Yeah, oh yeah, you got to ride it, man. That's what Jim Carrey's doing, but we'll touch on him later. Yeah, the Pro Tour is, I don't know, I feel like I'm bored. I'm bored of this. I saw this. Wasn't this last Pro Tour? Like, I don't know, man. I really like what this whole 5 week delay thing did to the average player. I think they enjoy the game a lot more now. But for a coverage standpoint, it's just boring. I don't know. It's the same decks. Like, I don't know. I don't think the pros can out innovate 5 weeks. But
it's very possible that that's the case, and I don't want to blame them for it.
The set is what the set is, right?
It's funny because now I live in such a different magical bubble.
Yeah.
I met up with the guy I play FNM with every week, and we're driving over to FNM, and I was saying, you know, oh, hey, did you catch any of the PT coverage during the day? And like, oh, you know, only caught like a little bit. And it's like, oh, you know, I watched most of it on Friday. Like, I like to catch the drafts always. And the drafts are still, I think with 5 weeks, the drafts might actually be better. Or people are less critical of people's card evaluations, but to me, it's not even really about that. But it's funny because I was telling him about which standard decks I had seen, like in a nutshell, and I was like, oh yeah, you know, they're using that stupid double the tokens card with the black, white enchantment. He's like, yeah, that's been online forever. I've seen that. And I'm like, okay, and there's a deck with God Pharaoh's Gift doing this. He's like, yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that. I know, it's like...
Ramunot Red, been around for 3 Pro Tours, it feels like. Murder Vehicles and Energy. Woohoo!
There's some overlap, and that's kind of what standard's always supposed to be. Is the many players feel like, oh, well, there's the best deck, and the best deck from the last format's probably good enough to survive into the next time there's a set release. But
I mean,
it wasn't about that. It was just about the fact that it was nothing new and exciting really was showing up from the perspective of people that I guess were following it closer than I was.
Yeah, but even the teams, I feel like everything about it is just like, I don't know, maybe we are overstimulated on newness, and when something is even remotely not new, because it's just good or maybe consistent, we're just like bored, and I don't know, maybe it feels like we're overstimulated with so much stuff that, I don't know. I was like hoping to see Jace tokens. I was like, man, I would love to see some funky stuff, but Ramunot Red, boring. Energy, boring. I don't know. I was just like disappointed. And I know you love Limited, which is fine. But I can't watch Limited, man. I just can't do it. Like, I turn it on, I'm like, okay, great, Pro Tour, get hyped, Limited's on. And I'm like, well, I guess I'll go back to working. Like, I'll just leave it on in the background.
It's like you get a 4-hour delay before you get to watch your Pro Tour.
But then I go. But then when the standard round starts and it's like Energy versus Ramunot Red, and I'm like, well, I guess I'll go start dinner. Like, it's just, I don't know. I just normally, like, a Pro Tour weekend is an exciting thing. Like, even my wife, like, she's like, ooh, is the Pro Tour on? Like, are you gonna watch it? And I'm like, yeah, I really want to try to watch a couple hours. And nobody even knows there's a Pro Tour this week. Like, my family doesn't care. Like, no one cares. Even I'm like, whatever. My brother was over yesterday. I'm like, you want to change your tires? Yeah, let's do that. Like, it just, like, there was no desire to check in. And then when I checked in, I'm like, yeah, it's the standard. I don't know. Now, I don't try to be negative about it. It's just we're in this such a bizarre other side of the curve from, like, the standard bannings from a couple years ago or last year. And now we're, you know, depowered set in, and we're seeing what this looks like. I mean, the world's cool. I just wish there was more. I wish there was a story there. Maybe that's what I'm looking for, you know? Like,
you do love that stuff, which is, yeah, which is a different, definitely different factor. I actually listened to the podcast he did about Ixalan world building, and it was surprisingly interesting, especially the first part where they were very much out in no man's land. About trying to get four tribes to work. I don't know if you listen to that stuff. That's the kind of story stuff.
No, I love the world building and the design aspect stuff is really cool. I like that stuff. When I have a chance, I try to listen to it. I think Wizards, even in those little like vignettes they do in between rounds where they talk to the developers and inside stuff, I just wish they would even go further. Like, the world is so bloody interesting. Like, I just want to know more. Like, how far did you guys think this out? Like, I know I know Vorthos might go kill me, but I don't own one of the art books yet from the worlds. I know. I'm the worst. Hopefully this Christmas someone will buy me one. But, like, they're supposed to have a lot of the lore and the story in it. And I'm like, maybe I need to, like, I don't know, get even further Vorthos-y. I'm not sure.
If it's going to offset the fact that the game isn't doing it for anybody, perhaps that is the case. The way I see it is, like, we have very much homogenized power level. Everything is just a mid-range, mid-rangey, mid-range deck. And that's whatever. I mean, I think for the most part, it's an ebb and a flow, and hopefully things will change and this won't become what's all of Magic. And I think the people building the game are not dumb enough to think that they can just keep doing things the same way and having it work. In the interim... This is fairly boring, despite the fact that it's like, oh, there's like six different decks. Look at all the different decks. It's like, yeah, they slowly play some middle of the road stuff. A bunch of attacking and blocking happens.
Second Sun. That's kind of interesting. I don't know. The whole God Pharaoh thing is cool, but, like, I don't know. There's cards. It's like where there's like a Torpor Orb on a stick card. There's like these hate cards that are out there that like could shut decks down, but no one's playing them, which is like very interesting to me that pros are even just like, you know what? I'd rather just play the most consistent thing because I don't know. Like, there's no spice, man. Where's Conley Woods? Where's the Brewers, man? How do we get Saffron Olive to like give him a free Pro Tour invite to see him wreck face? I need newness. I need someone to come in and upturn this, like, I don't know, this risk averse choice to deck lists. That's what I'm gonna say.
What did Travis Wu play this weekend?
He made it. I think he's out. I don't know.
Oh, really? No, he didn't.
He was at the last Lingering one. Souls, but then I looked and. I don't know, he's not on Team Lingering Souls. There you go, people. I'm that invested. Well, I don't even know. Like, I don't even know. I wasn't even hyped to see the jerseys. I was like, oh, they're unveiling new jerseys for the teams. I'm like, I don't know, whatever. I don't know. And hey, as a graphic designer, like, I usually get excited about stuff like that. But I was like, nope, whatever. But I feel like we're in this, like, pre-roll, you know? We're in this pre-roll they're setting up for Arena. You know, so they want to keep it about standard dinosaurs because that's kind of like what Arena's built in. And it's like, you know, the spotlight is right here. I can see all the little ads they drop for Arena. I got my beta key or whatever it is. So whenever that drops, I get to play it. So that's kind of cool. Which is neat. Have you had a chance to check out any of the developer streams in Arena? No?
I still don't care?
Okay, well, I'll talk about it real quick.
I'm going to be honest. I'm waiting for someone like you to let me know, unbiased, unfiltered. Like, you know, because all the stuff that's being done right now is very much like, well, I have to click on this box, and I definitely have to click on this card, because those are the only things that work.
No, You know what's weird? I will own up, and I will say that the developer streams they are doing is very transparent. I mean, I'm surprised they're showing the game and being very honest about things. They're still being wizards, you know, when it comes to when they say, what about the marketplace? And they're like, we're not prepared to comment about that, which is fine, because they probably don't even know yet. But so far, the development of the game, like, and seeing things is very interesting. I wish they had done this with Magic, Magic Online, the last version. Man, they would have gotten way better feedback. Like, they're really trying, and that's a good thing, right? I can totally see that there's a lot of money behind this, and they don't want to fuck it up. They want to make this good, you know. And whatever, that's like the only kind of exciting thing that's coming in the next little while. Oh wait, don't we get a modern pro tour? I'm excited about that. Or it's a half modern pro tour, whenever that's going down.
Oh, is that?
I heard someone talking about it. I don't even know what that is. There's a modern pro tour coming up. I think it was Rogue Deck Builder. So I don't. I thought there wasn't modern pro tours, or maybe there's like standard rounds and or there's standard draft rounds. I don't know. Whatever. We'll figure that out. I'll say this: when SCG does modern, those are awesome. I love those. Those I will tune in and I will pay attention to what's happening. But, you know, maybe it's the journey perspective, right?
Perhaps Star City will pivot because, usually this time of year they're announcing what they're going to be doing for the following year. It'd be nice if maybe they kind of took up that banner. That's another weird spot for the game right now.
Why?
Well, just where modern's at, where we're getting closer and closer to this breaking point with that format,
because
it's like
stale, or that it's like expensive. Because it feels to me like
it's getting larger and older, and so the way they've been offsetting it for years is to print the modern master sets to get the cards back out there. Okay, well, if they're doing a good job, then you'd think somebody like Star City Games would step up to the plate and be like, well, look, if they're going to print new packs that we can make money on every year for this format, cards out there that we can buy and sell over and over again.
Yes, they are. They're up to two master sets a year now. Dude, here's the thing. Look, I'm just going to tell you this. God. Go look at the price of Tarmogoyf. Go remember the episode of Heavy Meta when it was $175, and I bet that it was going to go back up. And it just continues to tank like a rock. The truth is, modern cards are reprinted a lot. Like, I think modern's pretty damn cheap right now. And I do not see it going up at all. I think it's going to just keep getting cheaper. Now, when crazy new cards come in that haven't been reprinted in 10 years, yeah, I guess you'll have a crazy spike card. But the staples, I think they do a really good job at maintaining, like, keeping them pretty damn low. I don't know. Two sets a year. Let's talk again in a year and see after we get another two sets of like modern reprints. I just can't see. I wonder if Star City Games is because they're like, look, there's so much reprints coming. It's hard for us to buy cards, right? Why would I buy this card to have it go down? You know, I'm not sure.
Maybe. I mean, they make plenty of money on getting the sealed product at wholesale and then selling it. Like, they could just do that for a while. I mean, the most historically in Magic dealers, success comes out of the basics, standard. I mean, you buy the product at wholesale price, you sell it to players for close to retail price, and then you buy their standard cards back for 30% of what the retail is, and just keep flipping that stuff over and over and over and over and over again. So any business could do that. I mean, Star City has had this kind of special niche area where they tried to attack things like Legacy for a while. Aggressive buy prices, more tournaments for it, et cetera, et cetera.
Legacy's like been silently shelved away, and no one talks about it except for one weekend a year now. That's kind of sad, man. No, you don't?
I guess, this is something I feel like is water we've treaded before.
I totally feel that.
But I mean, you saying it out loud is a big step to me, because it's like, yes, Maddie, I agree that this format, many people, thousands of people love, isn't going to work.
It does work. It is interesting. I just feel like you got to put more eggs in more baskets, you know? You got to, like, have the way the side note that no one cares about, but I'm going to talk about it anyways. In my regular life, I'm a creative director of a bunch of companies I've created. But I've been in the process of doing something, which is I'm rewriting our base design process, which is pretty complicated for most people to understand. But it's a way of tackling design problems with a set framework, et cetera, et cetera. So it's been very hard, especially doing it for three companies. It's very hard. But there's a lot of research and intensity that I'm like putting into it, and I'm learning a lot. And one of the things I'm learning is that you can't force. Like in the olden days, you could have a logo lockup, and it's like, this is the logo. You never change it. Nothing moves. It stays the same. And now because of mobile design and everything is fluid, your logo isn't one shape. It's multiple shapes. So you test adaptation and readability of how a logo can morph and change depending on like liquid, you know, web layouts and stuff. And I know I'm going technical, but what I'm trying to get to the point is this, that the new methodology is if you're a company, what you put out, you can't force a direction. You can't say, I want you to consume my product like this. And there's one road and that's it. Now successful companies say, here's the product. You, as the consumer, you define what the roads are to get to it, and you define your experience. So I feel like wizards would learn and benefit more of taking that design approach and understanding that the game is so complex that it takes tons of different avenues and ways to you know, enjoy it. And they try to force certain aspects that I get. They got to put marketing dollars to it and CROI on it. But like to me, it's like if you just open it up a little more, let it be a little more fluid, you'd have people that wouldn't become fatigued. I don't know if the word is fatigued or they hit roadblocks, but you know, there's a lot of people I know that, hell, there's a community, a bunch of us that people just have kind of silently just gone away. And I wonder if it's life, if it's other things, but it does definitely feel like, you know, I want to consume magic in a certain way and I'm not being allowed to do that. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just, you know, 21st century problems. You know, it's just like, man, you want everything. I don't know.
I would say that the game is now existing. Sure. Like, you could port your example to say that the rigid part of this equation is the way the game was created and what it is. It isn't something that ports well to 21st century media consumption. Because again, that was a problem that was not going to be thought of back in the early 90s. And to that end, the game has to expand to new places it's never expanded to before, and you can't do it smoothly. You can't even sit in a meeting and be like, all right, guys, well, we got to be able to pivot with this. What can we do? Because your initial product is kind of locked into this this format. I mean, we talked about it the last time we casted where it was, you know, oh, could virtual reality be the answer to get people closer to the action? Well, it's still like, well, they're playing a card game, and there's concealed information, and there's all these things that make it difficult to interact with, that who knows if they're going to get over it. They're not exactly a company that has a lot of money in the R&D side of that kind of development.
That is not like, and you don't, I don't know. That's the weird conundrum there where, man, if they were investing just like 10% of their profits into like how to experience the universe of magic in other ways every year, they'd probably be the size of Hearthstone or bigger. Because they would have been on that trend, man. But whatever. I mean, I'm not necessarily...
Sure. But think about it, like, what they want. Like, think about Transformers. Like, when Transformers became successful the second time around,
it was Megan Fox.
It wasn't because they reprinted the initial toys. It's because they...
It was a resexualizing of...
Sure. Point to your own conclusions.
If you watch Stranger Things 2, by the way, Stranger Things 2 Season 2, or Stranger Things Season 2 was the fucking bomb. Oh my God. I love that. That was hands down 10 times better than the first season. I hate the first season. I know. Hey, I'll go on the controversial branch. But
wow,
season 2 is amazing, and it's nostalgia, but done correctly, which is super hard to hit. Transformers failed. So, like, Transformers, to have been successful for that older audience, had done a little more things like, you know, Stranger Things does. I get, though, that when you do that, the little kids who are buying toys nowadays probably would look at it and say, that's not cool enough, or maybe it's not technical enough. I don't know. Michael Bay's vision, though, is super polarizing. Me personally, I think it's a bastardization. It's just garbage. Like, I don't even acknowledge that as canon. That's just trash, right? Well, but that's Michael Bay. I don't like Michael Bay's interpretation of what he does with things. I think it's overly complex and screamy and loudy and, I don't know, it's just very simple and boring, which we'll talk about another movie at the end of the show.
But my point was that Hasbro is like, okay, take a property and now bring it up in a different way. Like, you know, you could acknowledge the old, but just go ahead and do something new and different. And I think you could kind of take that same formula and look at Magic and be like, look, people love the Jace. You know, people love the concept of spells and wizardry. People aren't necessarily in love with the game mechanics, so we'll just take the characters that they love, we'll take the elements that we want to draw from, and we'll make a brand new product that works in 2017 moving forward. And yep. That feels like what Arena is. Now, for old curmudgeons like me, or just hardcore gamers on the edge of playing chess, like, yes, the elements of gameplay are what draw me to Magic. Like, I don't need the art book. Sure, the art is beautiful. I don't need the Uncharted Realms stories every month. I'm not reading that shit. I just need my ones and my twos to add up in a way that's very interesting and interactive.
You're a puzzle solver, though. That's what you want to do. You want to solve the puzzle.
And if you're sitting there in the meeting with the Hasbro guys, it's like, well, we got you covered. We got a puzzle game. Just go download that one. You'll be fine.
Well, that's... The depth of Magic is handling that correctly when it's giving you a different experience than me. I think that's great. I think the game itself generally is good. I just think how it's handled in terms of you're stopping certain people from enjoying the game the way they want to. You know what I mean? Like, to me, I was talking to this person about, because we were laughing about the From the Vault transform. And, you know, I don't buy From the Vault. I think they're in this bizarre situation where, you know, maybe if there was a cool set like Angels, I was like, oh, my kids would probably like that. I'll buy it for them. But then it's $150. And I'm like, I'm not buying my kid a $150 thing of cardboard. That's stupid. So, like, it's weird where they want it to be affordable. They want it to appeal to the casual, but then it's not priced right. And then there's no value there. So I was interested in seeing what's going to actually be in this set. And when there was no Jace Finn's Prodigy in it, it's very interesting. To me, I think this is probably correct with just go for those flashy, splashy, casual cards. Give them some fancy stuff, and it's cool for them. And maybe the value is not there. The one idea we did come up with, though, was something that I've always wanted, which was, can we have, like, a almost like, don't put masterpieces in standard sets, because we've seen what that does. Oh, that's a shit show. We don't want to go down again. But what if you did do a From the Vault with good foiling, good art, good cards, and maybe it's $200, but who cares? Like, I don't know, you know, like, to me, I'm like, there is a market for people who want that super high-end stuff, and then you could take a chance. This is what I love. If you did that, you're only risking 15 cards at a time or 20 cards, whatever you're going to want to put in there, and maybe you want to do a proxy guy, full art bleed, crazy thing you could never do in a standard set because of technical reasons maybe, or because of feedback, right? It's too much investment if it goes wrong. But if you do it in a From the Vault Collector's Edition or something where you try something funky, I think they should do stuff like that. That's, to me, where there's a big unserved market, and it also acts as a testing ground, right? Like, let's test the look of Amonkhet frames on a product like that before we drop it in a standard set. You know, I think they could do little things like that where they're pushing the boundaries, like, for those people that want that, you know, alt art, secret, obscure thing, you know, to play at that high-end level with good cards and use it as a, I don't know, I don't want to say an investment vehicle, but that is part of the game, right? So I think...
Not necessarily. I just think that... I don't think there's an employee at Wizards that's advocating for what you want not. Right there, right
obviously
now.
Obviously not. That is very clear. That's why I'm saying it. I don't know. I could be wrong. It could be product fatigue.
No,
right?
But even... It's funny. Even as we're talking, the design development process has changed. I mean, that's something that Mauro had alluded to in his podcast last week as well, about how they're no longer going to have the 18-month cycles with so many months in the world-building side and then the overlap with the development side and then the handoff. Like, I would imagine they're closing the window on it a little bit
more.
They're risk-averse.
That's the entire reason they're doing this, is to, like, prevent risk, which, sadly enough, you made a comment earlier about how everything is so equal. This will only result in more of that, because they're going to reduce chances for risk. Like, they don't want things to break. So I feel like
Yeah.
I don't know. If you don't like what's happening right now, you're not going to get anything different, at least for the next little while.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons that I'm content in my little bubble, my little world. And we talked about it before. It's like, I'm happy to draft. Draft is always going to be kind of a high priority when they're doing their set design, set building, and you can always build a new Hill Giant.
I don't think you can. I think you can get bored. To me, it just, the patterns become, and maybe it's because, like, during the design process I'm working on, like, part of the exercises that we do with clients in the workshops is pattern recognition. So, like, I'm hyper-focused on that, and I can see how you would come up with a design framework, right? Like, I would love to sit in and watch the design process because I would just love to see, and I could point out all the things they're doing wrong. Like, they're probably coming up with a system where they have a template. Like, hey, we start a set, copy, paste, new template. We know that roughly these power to toughness ratios and amounts of instant servers, they probably have a very, very standard template. And then they're like, how do we, yeah, and then they just move a dial here, move a dial there, right? And that's how you get, like, for me, I noticed this when I first started playing the game, the repetitiveness of standard or of draft was, or unlimited was just too boring for me. That's when I wanted that's how I got into the flavor aspect, because I'm like, okay, can I bash in with a 5/5 green cool dinosaur instead of a 5/5 Eldrazi? You know, like, at least give me something visual so I can think it's a different thing. You know, but I'm really doing the same thing every time. And maybe that's just, you know, I don't know, maybe the consistency, right? The level, maybe consistency is worth more than the dynamicness of the changing environment. I'm not sure how to word it, but just something I noticed. Like, the patterns are really obvious. Or maybe it's because I'm just now too educated of a player and I see it more. Hard to say.
It's a combination of things. I do think that you know, they have that document that they poured over, because they have certain boxes they have to check, especially for limited. You need a white guy that does this and a green guy that does this, a common, all that kind of stuff. And can completely agree with you that at this point, the player base, even the expanded one that we've had over the last handful of years, it has seen it all, and we got to come up with new tricks. So maybe somewhere in the reasonable,
like,
future,
like, you were, we here, can see, you were here much longer than I was. What was the time? Like, I'm wondering, right? Planeswalkers were created in Lorwyn. Lorwyn was 10 years ago now? No. Not 10.
Oh, Jesus.
No, 7 years ago. Probably was. It was 2010?
No. It wasn't end of 2007 was Lorwyn?
Shit, you're right. It is 10 years. Look at that. That's interesting. So I'm wondering.
Good God. I remember the Lorwyn pre-release very vividly. I lost a Gale Powder Mage plus Shriekmaw combo.
Shriekmaw, what a crazy creature. No, but I'm just saying, it's very interesting that, you know, the flip cards, which I think are awesome, and I think we're going to see a ton more because they're just great design space to play in. While I love energy, I really still like energy a lot. It's just, maybe we needed a card that, like, you know, when it enters the battlefield, it empties the energy pool of the other player. They needed something, because I think that type of design space is where they're going, that in-between space, right? That other resource, you know, like a planeswalker is kind of like another resource. Like, yeah. So I think, to me, maybe we need more new stuff, but then, I don't know, the level of the game gets super complex. I'm sure they sit in meetings and get, you know, we can't keep adding new shit. And then they made vehicles, so whatever. they already did it. What am I talking about?
Interesting. No, yeah, I mean, you talked your own about circle
vehicles.
On it.
I was like, when did they? Oh, yeah, that's right. They did do that. So there you go. That's how much vehicles stuck with me.
They did do something new and different. But again, you got to remember, every time you invent an energy, you automatically create a whole new Hill Giant, new Grizzly Bear, because now I can add an energy, or I can, that's not my issue. My issue was, and I feel like we talked about this before, where it's like, limited formats used to feel
between sets, right?
They used to have,
and now it's very consistent
between sets, between blocks, anywhere in between. You know, like, I can remember like in original Mirrodin, where it was like, wow, you know, like on the base stats, it's really tough to get bigger than a 4/4. So 4/4 is kind of the top of base power and toughness. Now, equipment had been introduced at the time, so you know, creature stats would change dramatically, and then there, of course, there were a lot of rabbit hole terms of strategies to have there, but like you could always kind of see a different baseline. It's like, okay, well, you know, this set maybe doesn't have a 3-3 for three, maybe there's a 2-4 for three that kind of changes things, so ground combat's going to be difficult. Like, there isn't that kind of conversation anymore. And that's just basic. Yeah, that's like outside of the mechanics. Like, the mechanics could change what kind of evasion there is, or what kind of the way, I mean, maybe combat's not as important. Maybe, you know, being able to manage this other resource is going to lead to victory. And, you know, could there be good games out of longer, limited games where there are stalls? Like, is that something we can even have nowadays? And to someone who FNMs regularly, the answer is generally no. Yeah. Because
I have channeled my TSG for the past since, oh, geez. When Innistrad came back, maybe Innistrad came back. I've been to every single pre-release because that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to really like it. But even I find it's the same thing. Like, I just, ugh. Like, I'm looking at the art and I'm making bad combat decisions because I'm like, that thing looks big. Like, I'm trying because it's just like the same thing every time. Oh, you made a bunch of small, fast creatures. I'm ramping to big creatures. Oh, you have a flyer. I don't like. I don't know. Maybe I'm just complaining about Magic in general, but I really like, if I look back at those older sets where, like, Mirrodin, right? Like, equipment. You had the things that made artifact-colored energy or whatever the hell it was. Like, things were just different. And I would love to see us go to a set that was, like, so different. You know? I don't want a wrapper. I don't want another a colorful candy wrapper on the same candy bar. I want a new candy. You know, maybe I just want something so different. But then again, that creates challenges for a production line, you know, pipeline, so.
Yeah. Who knows? But if you hold out long enough, we may get there. If we don't get buried under this this super mid-rangey world we live in. I'm watching the PT coverage in the background. I'm watching fucking Sacred Cat.
It'll come back as a 4/4.
Stupid walls of creatures.
Where you go down and then you come back with all this lifelink energy or lifelink guys and you just come back. Here's one thing I wanted to talk about quick is I had a good idea. I think corsets are coming back. Wow, this is out of it. I'm just guessing at things. I've heard a rumor. I'm pretty sure corsets are coming back for 2018. Maybe it's 2019. Well, anyways. And one thing I wanted to touch on is they've crafted this storyline within Standard that's so followable, right? Like, it's seasons in a Netflix show, and that's great. And I do that. And I like that a lot. I think that allows people to keep coming back to the story, and it's great. There's nothing wrong with that. But I feel that a couple of people have been touching on lately about the repetitiveness of the story elements and the characters, and, you know, they're trying now to move away from the Gatewatch and stuff, which is cool. I would love to see, though, something that, you know, I'm a huge Rick and Morty fan. One thing that show does is it gives you these breaks, and the break is Intergalactic Cable. Those episodes, you know, Morty's Mind Blasters, they're so entirely crucial to changing the flow of what you're consuming. So, like, I would love corsets to do that. You know, Intergalactic Cable style. So it's just random, not even random, it's just cool shit from all of Magic. Maybe you put Urza in there. Maybe you put whatever you want in there, you know? And you have something that's really neat and interesting so that, like, the middle of the year comes and it's not like, hey, these are boring things to fill Standard with. There may be that sprinkled in there for mechanical reasons for maintaining Standard, but how cool would it be to just be like, hey, man, here's Jalabar, you know, I don't know, whatever character you could think of. And here's something really cool that we haven't seen in a while. Or, you know, maybe touch on Koth. What the hell's Koth doing? You know, don't have a theme to it. Just make it random. It's these little pockets, you know, like we're flipping through the multiverse and we're like, where's that guy been in a while? I think that would just be really cool. I think.
They I feel did. Like they kind of did that with corsets at one point.
There was five stories, right,
of
the walkers. That was great, you know. I think it was excellent. I would like to see that applied even further. Take that even further. Because I hate how, like, there's definitely a clear clamoring and there's a desire for a lot of things. But Maro and other people just say, no, we're not, we can't. Like, the Brothers War. I don't think they're ever going to go back to that. That's gone, dude. When we go back to Dominaria, it's going to have nothing to do with that. Right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that story I actually knew about from, because that was when I was a kid, but it was like, the original concept of the Planeswalker was much more like, well, the character you're supposed to be playing in the game, where you're kind of strangely omnipotent. It's like, oh man, your life total got reduced to zero, but let's shuffle up and do that again.
And there's still some aspect of that. It's just you are a Planeswalker that's teaming up with other people, which is fine. I get that. I just would love to see, like, could you imagine the hype? Corset 2018 and Urza Planeswalker. What? And people are like, well, where does that fit in the timeline? You're like, there is no timeline. It's Intergalactic Cable, bro. It's just random cards. So it's so weird because there's been such a focus on story and connectivity that I want to break it. It's the pepper, right? This is Marcel. I'm channeling the Marcel spice. I need spice. The story is too linear. It's too easy to predict what's going on. It's boring. Give me the spice. Show me something that I would never see coming in a million years. The fact that we were already understanding, oh, Emrakul's on the moon, like the storyline, and I know you don't give a rat's ass about this, but like, I know. Look, I'm just saying.
I don't, but I'll try to play
one. Maybe it's the quality of the writing, but the general surprise factor, I think, is like under 2 out of 10. I think it's really low. Rarely do you get surprised, even in like we were saying about Limited. The game is, once you understand the underlying patterns of what's happening, it's kind of like you're in secret mode, man. You know what you're doing, you know, and you don't get blinded by the little flashy wrapper on it. So I'm like, I would love to see Corset that's just like spice, boom, drop it. Give me something funky I never see coming. I love what they did with that whole, you know, Iconic Masters release where they just released it out of nowhere. Just more of that, please. You know, more unexpected things. And I think that's, I don't know if we'll ever get it. Because it flies in the face of understanding ROI for business bobs, but whatever, man. Whatever. Let me enjoy my game how I want, man.
Well, let me tell you about something that isn't Magic the Gathering, then. We'll move away. Man, do I need to decompress from this strange gaming thing I went to the other day.
Yeah, what was this?
Yeah. So there's these guys based out of Irvine that wanted to run a board game tournament, effectively, and they it's called Unrivaled, like the TG, like Table Games or Tabletop or something like that. That's their Twitter handle. These guys had a 2017 series, and I got a special invite to go and play in their grand finale in Las Vegas, participate in any one of the 6 games that had a backed sponsorship from these guys. And cool. If you look at the games that are involved, first of all, 3 of them I'd never heard of, and 3 of them aren't exactly the most skill-intensive games. There's a lot of chance in a game like King of Tokyo or Munchkin, or I ended up playing Ascension from Gary Games, from Justin and Brian, those guys. So Magic players.
I tried to play Munchkin, and I don't like it.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Munchkin either.
I love Exploding Kittens. I'll play that game all day long.
So,
like, if you want randomness, that game's dope.
Yeah, and it's cute. Like, I've tried so hard to be just nothing but glowing for the guys that try to do this thing, and it has been difficult to stay positive about it. You know, they pretty much gave away flights to like 700 something people to come play in this thing in Vegas. For, you know, 6 games, each game has a $10,000 grand prize for the overall winner. They're giving out something like, you know, 20 grand per game for 6 games.
So are these like big marketing tools? Like, essentially they're just trying to get the word out there?
I think it's a combo effort. Part of it is, they're looking to get backings from the companies that make the games. Like, your game's going to be highlighted, you know, give us money. Okay. And at the same time, they are trying to grow a tournament series. Like, they're trying to sell their package to game stores across the country and be like, look, here's another outlet. And of course, as soon as I start interacting with these people and learning more about it, it's clearly these are guys that wish they could run a Grand Prix but aren't going to have a chance to run a Grand Prix, so they just want to be their own cool kids club. Like, they all think...
Oh, is this fallout from the whole Channel Fireball running?
It's not fallout. These guys aren't even on the radar for that. Oh, like, okay. They're... Right. But they've been to enough events that they think that they know what they're doing. But again, on the surface,
let me tell you, man, watching Grand Prix run by really pro people, I could never do it. It's ridiculous.
Well, you know, again, this last weekend dictated to me that yes, you can't just give this opportunity to any schmuck and have them run it properly. So on the onset, they're very nice. You know, the free flight, free hotel. They're at the Paris. They didn't put us up in some shitty spot. You know, there's free meals, free, you know, ride from the airport to your hotel. Everything's included.
Wow.
And for, all right. for all
VIP, man.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I flew in. I actually made my flight come in Friday morning so I could get to T-Mobile to watch the Knights play that afternoon.
Yeah, well, I saw that. And then you don't tweet about it and you shit talk them on the next podcast. Nice.
No, the Golden Knights.
You're like, hey, man, we'll pay for you to come down. We hear you're big time. And then you're like, yeah, no problem. I'm going to go watch a hockey game. Yeah. And I'm not going to tweet about your shit all weekend. I'm not going to talk crap about you. Jets. I can't.
That's how it played out. That is how it played out. It wasn't my original intention. But as the story progresses, you will understand why I did not give these guys two cents. Because okay. It wouldn't have been a positive 2 cents. So,
okay.
So as a side note, T-Mobile right there next to New York, and Monte Carlo, yeah. Spectacular experience. Everyone inside super nice. The arena's nice. There's even a little bit of Vegas theatrics with their professional hockey that is just barely within the realm of what you'd expect. Like talking to a fellow Torontonian, you will understand this.
Answers.
You will understand this better than anybody. Where it's like. We take our national sport very seriously.
Oh, hockey is very serious.
Yes, yeah. It is life where we are. And so
it's not like baseball. Baseball is like a way laid back thing. Like I've noticed that. I've been to baseball games in the States and it's like much more casual. Hockey game in the States is not like anything like it is in Canada. And then again, Vegas is probably even that other end of the spectrum, right? Because they're trying to make
that,
like a
okay.
Show.
So you hit on something that again, I would expect all of Ontario to have this opinion, which is hockey in Las Vegas, and they're called the Golden Knights. It's going to be going to the fucking the medieval times thing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The medieval times. Yes, that's exactly.
So you'd think
what
it's that.
Think.
Plus,
that's literally.
Plus, if you've ever been to Orange County to watch hockey, the Ducks fans, Orange County hockey fans are the most. Laissez-faire, whatever, and not in like a negative way. Apparently,
yeah, they're just
Orange County. Because again, Orange County, Southern California has so much going on that it's not like you need to be a fervent sports fan. It's more like, well, it's Friday. I don't want to bother to go to any of these other places. I could. Let's go check out the hockey.
Yeah, and it's hot outside. Let's go sit.
Everybody's like, oh, it's so nice you came. Oh, how are you doing? And I'm wearing the opposing team's jersey. So it's like they don't give a shit.
Of course.
So Las Vegas is like these things combined. Like the game is going to start, and they wheel out a rock with like an Excalibur sword stuck in the middle to center ice. And then they do this theatrical thing where the opposing team has like a dude in armor. You skate onto the ice with their team's flag and be like, ooh, I'm going to steal the sword from Las Vegas. And then the Golden Knight skates out from the other side and is like, no, I'm going to stop you. And then they, like, fight. And then the Golden Knight pulls the Excalibur sword.
Are you... Hold on, I have to stop. Are you telling me what a Canadian would, like, think is happening? Or
This legit happened. This actually happened.
Bullshit.
Yes, this no actually way. Happened.
What does Excalibur have to do with it? Oh, because he's... Yeah, I could see the connection. That's...
But here's the thing. It's like, they didn't burn too much time on it. They didn't go super over the top with it. And they kind of had fun with it. And overall, it worked for me. It was just like what you'd... It was just the right level of theatrics for what you'd expect from a Las Vegas hockey event. You know, they come out and they make this big speech about how, you know... They've hockey's finally come to the desert. Everyone's so excited. I mean, they did this like jokey thing about because their mascot is a Gila monster or whatever. Like they don't even. I know, right? There's a go on Twitter, go to the Golden Knights, and go back. He did a segment last week where like he did you know like Jimmy Kimmel's like mean tweets. They did a segment similar to that for their mascot because everyone on the internet's making fun of their mascot.
Oh.
That was really tongue-in-cheek. That whole part was really great. You know, they have this segment that they do where they take a person who's a transplant to Las Vegas from the city that they're playing against and be like, oh, man, you know, you're going to be a Knights fan now. And they rip off the old jersey and give them the Knights jersey, and everyone's super excited. It's the theatrics just keep it together. The glue is just enough there that you're like, yeah, this is fine. This is kind of what I expected.
But was the quality of the game good? Like, because I would expect Vegas to be like, the graphics on the screens are going to be nuts. Like, I expect it to be like super entertaining versus like the pure right. No,
and again, like I am such a curmudgeon kind of in that regard that it's like as soon as the Ice Girls became like a regular thing, and as soon as like over the top graphic interludes or like a section of your arena being where the band plays or the cheerleaders dance, I was like, fuck this. This game has gone to shit. Like, how the fuck did this happen? But that's commonplace now. Like, everybody... That's
part of the show because rich guys that can afford box seats don't care about sports, dude.
So it's like, I can't knock Las Vegas for the fact that they have, like, behind the visitor's net, they've got... like their little castle, and they've got like a. It's great. And they've got like a drum line where guys are wearing like LED drum sticks, and the cheerleaders are dancing. And but again, like I was at American Airlines Center. I've watched hockey in Texas, and it's the same shit over there already, and they've been doing it for years. They've got the cheerleaders and the band and the big fucking 10-gallon hats and whatever. It's like it's fine. It doesn't really faze me. When I want people to come and scrape the ice, I expect it to be overweight, bearded guys that are doing it. I don't need chicks in skimpy.
No, they're hot. Even in Toronto.
That's what I'm saying. Is it's all over. Like, we've lost. It's 2017. You got to get the kids in there with the booty shorts. It's.
Although, wait, what do they have now? They have that the one thing that everybody does. Like, even my kids, when I took them, did they do the thing where they put everyone? They put like five people in bubbles, and they just have them like. Blast around in the ice.
I mean, they have the standard like musical chairs on ice kind of thing, which you see everywhere. I mean, their between period entertainment was no different than any other sporting event. It's just the stuff that's happening around the arena on the outside that's mildly Vegas, but it's still overall it's still fine with me. Like, nothing pushed me over the edge. We had a great time.
Here's the big question.
Oh, I got lucky. We got our seats six rows from the glass for $85 apiece.
$85. So basically why I'm asking for anyone that, you know, cares is like 85 or six rows up from the glass in Toronto is
now
$800.
Now remember this is an expansion team. I went and saw them in October for a Friday at 3 p.m. start against the Colorado Avalanche. So there's a lot of factors there that make it not a big draw.
All right. I'm curious at the lead, like, who is the draw for that team, right?
The place should be a sellout every day because you've got a combination of locals that are ecstatic to have their own team.
Obviously.
And because it's Las Vegas, you're going to have a huge influx of away players, away fans all the time. Yeah. Like, I was pretty bummed that when the Leafs come to town, it's fucking New Year's Eve. I'm not going to pay for that. Like, I want to, but...
Oh, my brother... So, by the way, my brother is... He's going down, and he's... Because my brother is as crazy as you are about hockey, especially the Leafs. He's doing this, and I've asked him already, I'm like, do you have a budget? He's like, you can't have a budget for New Year's Eve with the Toronto Maple Leafs in Vegas. So I'm like...
Is your brother single?
I'm like, dude, you're going to blow up.
Oh, man. He is going to come back fucking broke. He's going... And hopefully without any extra diseases.
He's turning... He's turning it into a whole boys' weekend, but I'm just like the amount of the numbers I'm hearing being thrown around, and this is a guy who will he'll pay playoff season tickets in Toronto, and it's
because that's what I'm saying. It's like I looked at the schedule and I obviously want to see the Leafs in Vegas, but I'm like that is a perfect storm of terrible. I'm not gonna go if it's a holiday and it's the only time we're gonna be there of the year and it's around Christmas. Like fuck that, man. The prices are gonna be ridiculous.
Well, I've never even been to Vegas during, like, I imagine everywhere is crazy during Christmas, right? Like, that Christmas week, I know everyone, even vacations, they double the
Vegas,
price, right?
I mean, Vegas is weird. It used to be, like, 10 years ago when I started going, Christmas was a great time. Like, all of December was a great time to go. The only things that were really happening were, like, the Cowboy Christmas event they have, but that's, like, partly downtown. Like, they have events going on, but it was not that big of a deal. So if you went between Thanksgiving and Christmas, prices were, like, the lowest of the entire year. Because that was kind of their deadest season. Now things have changed. I mean, they're really embracing not only just like more family stuff, but just the holidays in general. I mean, the city is adapting as it needs to. I mean, there's so many spots there are now non-smoking. It's crazy. The whole world is changing, and that's fine.
Oh, dude, what are you talking about? Can I just say this? There is not enough.
It's just weird. I feel like Vegas is my home away from home. I've grown up there in a lot of ways, and just to see it change that much has been very, very different to me. But nowadays the holidays, most of them are pretty crazy. Like, this is the first year I've been in Vegas for like a Halloween weekend. Like, I would specifically avoid Las Vegas around Halloween because to me there's just no fuck reason. Like, most holidays I'll avoid Vegas because everything is needlessly more expensive. Like, the whole point of Las Vegas is it's party town 365. Like, I don't need to go there. I don't need to go there on a holiday because it's a holiday all the time. And watching these chicks like walk around as like slutty cat, it's like you don't need to do this. Like, you don't need an excuse today to do this. You could have done this on Wednesday. It wouldn't have mattered. No one would think twice about it. Like,
it's their social norms, dude. Let people be people. Also, by the way, where are we? Yeah. We kind of fell off the track.
There is, but the highlight of it was the hockey game. Team Mobile Arena, intimation, Team Mobile Arena was great.
So now it's going to get worse.
Please go back there. Schedule it. Everyone is super nice. The local fans are great. The out-of-town fans are going to be plentiful wherever you're going to go. A great experience. Can't wait to go back. I'm planning a couple trips this season for sure. But they paid for everything. I would come in. You know, I had to go register Friday night, and I stupidly thought that the tournament would be 2 days, like a PT. So I scheduled like the last flight out on Sunday.
Yeah.
But the tournament was only going to be 1 day, so kind of fucked myself over on that. But not as important. So, you know, go.
So how many people were there? Give me you got to tell me the story. How many people is it? Like 500 people?
It's about 800 players.
How crazy.
But it's 800 players split across six different games. So it's a little weird.
Okay.
But so like I go and I check in Friday night, and they've got like, you know, literally like little girls that are someone that's working there's children, like, you know, giving you your player bags or checking you in. And sure. It felt like a very homely experience. It felt like a very, very down-to-earth, like, small run organization. It didn't feel like it was trying to be anything really big. I mean, obviously, they throw the money at it. But it didn't feel like it was anything trying to be run super big. Yeah, and so going into Saturday morning, I was like, you know, this is just going to be a relaxed time. Like, I kept telling everybody, like, man, I'm going to Vegas for a slots tournament, as far as I'm concerned. I'm competing in a game with 100 people from across the United States that know how to play the game, and it's not a game that is super skill intensive. Like, I'm just going to go. I was playing Ascension, but I'm only playing the base set of Ascension. So if you've only ever played the base set with three other people at the same time that know what they're doing, it's kind of boring. So,
going into
Saturday morning, everything seemed fine. You know, we had a player check-in time. We had like a deadline when we had to be ready to be in our seats for 9:30. The grand finale was going to be inside this theater at the Bally's. It's hosted by Will Wheaton and some no-name comic. And it's printed on the room keys for the Paris for that weekend. So this is a big deal. Like, it has a start time. It has to happen. And so I'm thinking, like, this is going to be like clockwork. These people must know what they're doing. And part of the pitch for this is they have made a software for tournaments. It's called Oomba, I think. It's like 00 or 000 MBA or something like that. And part of this thing is, like, we're all just big guinea pigs for them to run their software program so that they can hopefully sell it to other people. I mean, who knows? Like, you know, if it works properly, Wizards may buy it and run all their events through this Oomba software because it has an app. It'll tell you your pairings, your seedings. It'll update standings and everything in real time. You know, they have all the stuff on the board. So Saturday morning, you know, wake up, get my breakfast, head to the hall, and it's supposed to be, you know, player seedings and meeting at 9:30. Well, if you've been to a Magic tournament or any kind of gaming tournament, you kind of know where this is heading. We don't fucking sit until 10:45. And since there's six different games, it's taking forever. But, like, they set the games in alphabetical order, so the Ascension people were sitting for an hour waiting to get started. And I'm still hanging in there. I'm still like, you know what? This is all going to work out. Everything's going to be fine. And it's instantly getting more complicated because you're not playing heads up. You're playing with four people. So imagine the EDH tournament. And it's all pods of four, but it's ultra-competitive pods of four. It's going to be a clusterfuck, right? And I'm not talking about necessarily
maybe
collusion between players. I'm just talking about like figuring out tiebreakers and who's the top of the game. So the day before, I'd ask like, "Oh, how many rounds is this thing going to run?" I get told it's going to be 5 rounds with a cut to top 4. I was like, "Okay, doing the math, you know, 120 players, you're going to have a best of 4 of each of them. 5 rounds will get the job done." That morning, we're told it's 4 rounds, and we're like, "That is not going to work. Someone's going to get fucked. They should really not do that." And they have this printed one sheet of exactly how the tournament structure works. So if there are, you know, 2 players tie. So if you win your table, you get 9 match points. If you come in second at your table, you get 6 match points. If you come in third at your table, you get 3 match points. If you come in last at your table, you get 0 match points. And the way the thing is structured, as soon as you have a 0, you're done, you should drop, you get out of there. And if you have 1 third place finish, you got to win the rest of the day. But there's only 4 rounds, so it's still kind of messy, it's not really working. And then they have this big page where they're explaining how tiebreakers work. So if 2 players at a table come in tie for first at the end of the game, they're each going to get 7 points instead of 9. Or if 2 players have come in second place, they get 4 points. Or if 3 players come in second place, they get so many points. Like, there's this big graph that explains what's going on. And then they also explain the tiebreakers, which is even crazier. They use this thing they call strength of schedule. So what they do is they add up all the total scores of all your opponents and then divide by the number of opponents you had, and then that equals your cumulative strength of schedule score, and whoever the player with the highest strength of schedule score is will be the one that's the highest spot. So I play my first table. You know, it seems like people that are very confident, they know what they're doing. I don't really think much about it. You know, my draw was not as good as the guy to my right. At the end of the game, I'm tied for third place at the table. And so my opponent and I think, well, we're each going to get 1 match point. We're probably done for the rest of our lives, but whatever, we're here to just have fun. And in my head, it's like, great, if I know I'm done with this by noon, I can go live my life. I can go have a weekend in Vegas. It'll be fun. It takes forever to get paired for the second round. Everyone inadvertently takes their lunch break when we're not supposed to because it took forever to get our second round paired. We get paired for our second round. I sit down at my table with 3 other guys. I'm like, oh, they're all asking, like, oh, did you come in third in the last one? Oh, did you come in third in the last one? We're all kind of implying we have the same number of match points. And I was like, yeah, you know, I came in third at my table. I go on to win my second table, so I got 9 points there. Now, they have these big TVs out there. It's keeping the stats up, and it shows that I have 12 points. And I was like, okay, great. You know, like, I got 3 points in my first match. I didn't get 1 from that tiebreak. I got 3. Maybe they give 3 for everybody. The paper, who knows if this thing works. I've got 12. Going to my next match, I win the table then. I get another 9 points. So now I've got 21 points with 1 round left to go. And now I'm starting to do the math, talking to the people around me. It's like, well, if you have 30 points, you're definitely in contention for the top 4 people. And I was like, oh, that's amazing. That's great. So if I have 3 firsts and a third, and unlike Magic where, you know, the earlier you lose in the day, the worse your tiebreaks are, here it doesn't necessarily work out that way, because as long as the people that you beat kept playing and kept acquiring points, they help your overall schedule, regardless of their finishes in whatever order. But I'm not even thinking about that at this point. I'm just thinking, you know, even if I win this thing, who knows where I'll fall into it, no big deal. Going to the fourth round, we learned that their whole system is garbage and their coding is shitty. So you know how in Magic, when they pair players, it pairs like top down. It starts at the top, yeah, and it pairs players on points based from that group and then goes into other groups. Well, this software prioritized the largest group with the same number of points and paired them first and then worked middle out. So let's put it in Magic terms. Let's say it's round 6, and the largest number of players in the tournament have a record of 3-2. Well, the tournament software would pair the 3-2s against all of each other first, and then it would start to take 2-3s and 4-1s and start to pair them against each other.
Then that
doesn't work. Not for a Swiss-style tournament that we were told we were playing.
Okay.
And for the most part, I don't fucking care. all of a sudden we're barreling towards the worst case scenario for me, which is I'm going to have spent my entire day doing this and I wouldn't have got anything out of it, which is the one thing I wanted to avoid altogether. I was like, I'm either going to win 10 grand or I'm going to go home at noon and I'm going to be happy about it. The fourth round is paired. I'm at like table 20 of 22 just because of the way this thing's worked out. And I'm like, I don't really care. I sit down against two other guys. They have a different point total than I have. And there's an empty chair. And the guy that that owns the empty chair is undefeated in the day. And he is pitching a fit that he should not be paired where he's paired. He stops the whole tournament. Is complaining that, you know, this isn't true Swiss pairings. You said we were playing a Swiss tournament. This is not how pairings work. I shouldn't be paired here. She should be at the number one table. He should be able to, like, draw with his buddy or whatever and be able to get into the top four, no problem. So this guy stops the whole tournament for an hour to complain. And then other people start to realize that this isn't working properly. But it's like, we're already in the trench. Like, we've already dug our way into this. You can't complain now. But during this time, I learned that my opponent from my first table that I drew third with had gone to the officials because he was awarded 0 points in our match. And he was very confused as to why he was awarded 0 points in his match. And it turns out that they gave me third outright and they gave him fourth outright. So they're like, oh, we're sorry. We'll fix that. So they swapped our spots from round one now that we're past round three. So now I was awarded 0 points from my first match and he was awarded 3 points from his first match. Now I'm playing for nothing and have no contention, and no chance of contention without knowing it, because no one tells you and no one confers with you, and it's not like if it's burned in, you're done. Meanwhile, since he had played two rounds, even like the total losers bracket, he was out of contention without knowing it himself because his strength of schedule opponents did not have enough points to get him into the top rankings potentials. So we both got fucked. And I learned about it because I see like the things are scrolling with our point totals, and I'm like, man, that doesn't make any sense. What happened to me? No one said anything to me. So I have to go to the scorekeeper, explain to this guy what the fuck is going on. And he's like, oh, well, there was an issue in the last thing. You know, your opponent said this, and I was like, well, we tied. Give me the fucking points back. Like I needed to win. Like you fuck this shit up. So they change it back.
Oh my god!
And then this my opponent from round one figures out. He goes and changes it back. Now they're trying to get the other two guys from our table on the phone to figure out what the result was. Oh god! It's a fucking cluster. I play my fourth round while this is happening. I win my fourth round, so now I should have 30 points. And looking at the tie breaks on strength of schedule, I could very much be in the top four of this thing and get to play for 10 grand. Because there's just a clean cut. After four rounds, you're either in the final four people playing for the money, or you're every fuck one else. So now, and we're just one of the six games that are getting screwed up by the system. There are a bunch of other people in the room who are having a way worse time than us because they're playing a less skill-intensive game and their matches don't go as smoothly as games of Ascension, who are mostly Magic players anyway, who like kind of understand the way the system works. Like, it was a giant shit show, and it only gets worse because now like judges are just like changing decisions from 6 hours ago because they're being bullied into doing so, and they have no control over the thing that's going. Their software that they're trying to pimp out for this thing isn't working. You've got a ton of people that are just pissed because this thing took all day. They had to delay the start of their grand finale for 2 hours because of all the shit that was going on. And at the end of the day, I couldn't argue anymore, so I just get shit-canned out of the chance to play for 10 grand when I would have had, like, looking at where I fell on the breakers in the next level, I was at the top of those, and they have no impact on your standing, so... And I go to my opponent from the end of the first round where I finally find him because he's also waiting for this, and we figure out what's going on. He's like, well, shit, man, like I'll just give you the win because I can't get in based on where my breakers are at. You just take it because it looks like you could get in. I was like, well, that would be nice. And at this point, the judges are so flustered and over it that they're just done talking to us. And they're like, no, we're done. No more. Like, we're behind schedule. So I may or may not got screwed out of 10 grand. I wasted my entire day on this tournament where they just flip-flopped about everything. It was not run well at all. And these are the same guys. Like, these are the kind of guys where it's like, oh, man, we're making our own GP. Like, we're taking other games. We can't do Magic. And we're going to do our own fucking thing. And it's like, dude, this is not working out for you. Well, you need to go back to the drawing board. And how did you not fucking test this software before you fucking ran this 700-person tournament for money? Like,
Yeah,
it was just such a fucking nightmare.
For sure. Beta testing is always a smart thing.
Yeah, you know, if you just kind of run the software once with some fake guinea pigs and just see if it worked.
Well, maybe they never tested it at this level, right? They probably were just like, hey, it works. You know, there you go, man. That's why I don't play other games. I try to play Magic.
Not running enough rounds. All this stuff is garbage. And the funny thing is, it's like I'm sitting there, especially the part of the room that I'm in, and it's mostly just guys that play Magic. Like, I got recognized multiple times. And it's funny because it's like dudes that are clearly just, they're not PT level players, but they want a game and they take their shit seriously. And it's like, man, really? We got to do this? Is this how we got
to
be?
Yes, of course, dude. You have to look
people. I should have just not shown up Saturday morning and just slept in and went and had a buffet.
Yeah, well,
the hockey game was great. Baseball was enjoyable over the weekend while I was there. Highly recommended. So I can't complain overall. Again, to the guys that did the Unrivaled tournament, I hope you get your kinks worked out for next year. They already said they want to host their tournament in Chicago if it happens. So I was like, I'm not going to bother with that. If it was in Vegas again, it'd be a different story.
Have that experience in a cold city. Yeah, I know. It's just not.
No, at least, again, I'm in Vegas. I get in early and do something fun. If I'm annoyed by the way things turned out, I get to go do something fun. And it's a fine time. But, be grateful for what you have in terms of Magic players, because your tournaments could be way worse.
Yeah.
Is what I have for
lesson
you.
Lesson learned. That's the thing. That's the thing right there.
Oof. Man.
Never again. That's all I'm saying. Never again. But anyways, since we're already an hour over the show, probably is coming to an end real quick, but I did want to touch on one thing before we leave. I got a chance to watch Blade Runner 2049 last night. Have you seen this? No. You have not?
I have not seen it. I live in a town full of film files, though, so I've heard many, many mixed reviews.
Okay. I'll give you one scenario that me and my brother saw, and we're just flabbergasted because it is probably the most visually beautiful universe. And I know I'll go Vorthos on it, but that's really what it is. It's gorgeous. I would watch a 12-episode Game of Thrones style show in that universe, hands down. It's just fantastically done. Everything was great. The problem is, Denis Villeneuve is a good filmmaker, and you can see the shortcoming is a story. There is no story. It's garbage. So you're constantly disappointed by the set design is fantastic, the music is great, the sound design's perfect, the visuals are great, the CG's gorgeous, everything's great, and then the story is just so bad. And you're like, what is going on? So I sat there for 3 hours, enthralled in 10-minute like segments where hey, let's just watch this guy walk through a desert, and it's just so beautiful, but you don't care and you're not invested about anything that's going on, and the emotion is so bad. And then Harrison Ford has a fight scene for no reason, and it's just it's one of those movies that like bombed for a reason. But it was interesting because even if it had solved all those story points and it had a really good plot and it was, it had a detective angle element to it and the mystery was revealed correctly and it was all done nicely, it would probably still bomb because audiences don't want a European-style paced film, even though I do. But I don't know. I was just curious to hear your thoughts on like those slower paced non-Avengers-style movies.
The problem is I've been so busy recently that I haven't had a chance to try to stay awake for 3 hours in a movie theater. And I understand, especially for my cinematographer, inclined friends, people who work on set, that it is just a visual masterpiece. I mean, film files, this is their Viagra. Like, they want to sit somewhere and just and sustain a hard-on for as long as possible while watching something visual. But I've heard the same complaints about how they're just, the story meanders, the story's non-existent. There was an opportunity, something really cool there, and they just didn't capitalize on it.
And that's what we said. There was the framework for probably a perfect film. And what was hilarious is that the story was the point. Like, the film, Denis Villeneuve is a director who can direct a very complex story. And everything was set up for it, and yet they didn't see it. It's like they were blind, right? They couldn't see that the story was the problem. And so they built everything around it perfectly, but the story was bad, and so it just couldn't save. So you can't save a bad movie with perfect visuals. And that's just one of those things that, like, because at the end of the day, you're not invested in any of the characters. You don't care. The plot is stupid, and it just doesn't fulfill anything, right? The visuals are so mind-fuckingly gorgeous that you're like, where's the story that goes with this? Because this is not the story I want to be watching. But the universe is so good that I hope, I just hope that this does not, for instance, I saw the rebooted Scarlett Johansson Ghost in the Shell because, you know, it's Scarlett Johansson and I like Ghost in the Shell. Unfortunately, that movie was garbage. Oh my God.
Yes,
absolutely
yes, yes.
Trash that missed the entire essence of what Ghost in the Shell was, where Blade Runner 2040 captures the essence, which is so rare for a movie to do, right? Ghostbusters to Ghostbusters, whatever that was, didn't do it. This movie did. It literally was like, this is the same universe. We're watching this thing, and they fucking didn't do the story right, which is just a huge mistake on their part. Like, how you didn't see that is, I don't know, maybe this is one of those, like, John, whatever, the guy with the giant spider that Kevin Smith talks about, but, like, if there were producers involved that wanted to have a Harrison Ford fight because it's too boring and we need action here, or maybe they're like, the story doesn't matter, just make it look great. I'm not sure, but it's funny that...
It just reminds you how collaborative a process filmmaking has to be.
It is.
That, you know, a handful of people can have the best ideas, the best concepts, the best work, but everybody involved has to make the thing the beautiful masterpiece that it could be at the end of the day. And now you have an example of a shining example of a one direction things went wrong. I mean, sure, you could point at the prequel Star Wars as being films that had a lot of good things going for it, and the writing was awful, or the fact that the CG was awful. But now you have something where it's like the visuals are stunning in this film, but there's just,
again, it's
shit all for.
I was talking to one of my friends, like, as we were rewriting our process, and the one thing that Hollywood just doesn't get in general, and I think most people don't get, is story. Good story is hard to write. Good story, and even, it's funny, just recently Brandon Sanderson wrote, he basically had the whole first book of the Reckoners next quadrilogy or trilogies, and he just pulled the book. And every other writer nowadays would be like, what are you talking about? Put that book out. I don't care. And he pulled it. It was finished. It was edited. Like, it literally would have gone to print, and I would have read it in probably like 3 months. And he pulled it because I'm not happy with what this is. But as a writer who writes books, you're really the only person, you have 100% control. And in a movie, I can't remember which director said this, but he was like, it's like you jizz all over an egg, and then a bunch of people take that egg and run with it. And you have the occasional thing where you can change a color. But, like, it becomes a living entity, and then you have no control over it. So once the process starts rolling, and you can't stop it. You can patch here and there. But, you know, 40 years ago or even beyond that, you had directors who were absolute super control freaks. Like, I think maybe even Fincher is still one of those directors that at least directs to where everything is controlled.
Well, Christopher Nolan is like almost a better example because his style will deviate a little bit more than, let's say, Fincher's. Like, Fincher's doing the same tricks over and over again, and people are like, "Well, it's worked before. I'm not gonna question."
Really? I think Fincher's pretty good. I love the way he.
I love Fincher, but I'm saying, like, I'm not saying he's a one trick pony per se, but I'm saying, like, his palette is much more
focused.
Kind of like deliberate or
it's his style.
Predictable.
I don't know if predictable the right word.
Let's say someone like a Christopher Nolan who tries to do something slightly off what he's, you know, known for or has success with, but people are still going to be like, yeah, let him do whatever the fuck he wants. Yeah.
It's just funny. I don't know. It's one of those things I've just been, again, it's like, it ties back into the whole thing about you're trying to find the way to, like, interact with other things, like brands, movies, whatever the entity you're trying to interact with. And, like, it just, to me, it's very funny that Hank Green had this thing where he talked about the 80% rule, which is something I try not to do, but I understand why it happens. And the 80% rule is basically whatever you're tasked with, once you get it to 80%, you should stop and you should just put it out. Sell it, promote it, whatever. Get it to 80% and you're done, because the last 20% takes 80% more effort. It just takes so much effort to get that last 20%, and very few people do it, and we're becoming a society where we accept 80%, right? So it's like, all right, that's good enough. That's fine.
Sounds like a metaphor for podcasting.
Oh, shit. I just got stabbed. Yeah, that's... tie it all back in. Let's tie this fucker up right now. It's done, man.
Yeah, I know. It's like with that in mind, thanks for listening. Maybe we'll do this again sometime.
Yeah, maybe. What 80%, let's see. Maybe in a couple of weeks then. That's good enough.
Yeah. Hey, who knows, man? But without the holidays coming up, I think I can foresee my schedule. And, you know, we'll talk more than about Magic for 10 minutes and bitch about it before bitching about other games. But, hey, you know what? If you take away anything from this podcast today, watch. Well, no, you can take away two things. Blade Runner, take some Adderall. And Golden Knights hockey, definitely see it, just not during the holidays.
And what's the third thing? Because there definitely was a third thing.
Don't go
to tournaments.
Magic Arena might be good. Well, no, I don't know.
I don't think that's a rule. That's just going to happen. I was going to say don't go to tournaments that are in their beta testing. And expect anything. Well, you can go to them. I'm not saying don't go, but just don't expect them. I think you had your expectations were out of alignment there.
Alright, man. This was fun. I gotta get going. But let's do it again sometime. Blu-ray, wait, follow a beta. I DVR for later. Copper Masa with a Gita Mueda. You can't define us X, Y, Z. It's a generational elitist. Have you cheating virtual think pieces? See these written words with medical science. Brains defiant. Thoughts heavy, baby. They're a major appliance. Leave a tad when dropping to flying. This fluid giant. Dude's nice. He tight screwed in with some pliers. Cool with some buyers. Yeah, nigga. Cool with some growers. Never know tattletales. Only I don't know us. Yeah, show me generation. Show us what you gon' show us. So listen, mommy. CV could collude with a boy. Mouthpiece like coins with a jubilant noise. Dude's rude and as useless as coins. Shoot them boys. Versed and rehearsed in the soothing of loins. Talk to Joey Earl, Kendrick Cole. Gatekeepers afloat. They are extensions of instinctual soul. It's the highest of commodity grade, and you can get it today. One hit and reading pages of Poe. Telly is low. Cuddle bunny ready to go. Day of the dead. Bury all the zombies instead. And it's just your aftermath. Bust a cut in your dreads. Bruce Lee and niggas. Ryo niggas. UFC. Smoke trio niggas. Sizzle out your USB. Surge pricing on these Ubers. I'ma give me a cab. Yo, where'd your Obi at? Arriving on impeccable grass. I'll be in NYC waiting for that law to pass. Cash it. Been waiting for a Jets title since last. Such a Todd Bowles. Gangrene on that ass. Magic Mike on the mic. David Blaine Douglas Henning. In the church. You bust the rhymes, it's my sermon, you get it. Horizontal spitting, I'm the exorcist of your witness. Don't interrupt me, nigga. Sorry, that's a sin unforgiven. Like how we be skipping on bees like cooking crack in the kitchen. Wait, just start the pack and dry it back up to wet. This mad city's not a game, easy, quiet, on set. Student of the past, trailblazing the day. Not acknowledging a trend of swept up in a phase. We still the highest of commodity grades. And you can get it, get it, get it, get it, get it today.
Oh,